I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the east end of Long Island. My food buddies are here, producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol, and senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Faith.
You can tell your friends no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. Okay, it's just around the corner now, and we have a new recipe to add to our Food Schmooze kit of recipes online. So you can go now or later to WNPR.org to see the links in one place for every dish that we have talked about for Thanksgiving these past few weeks. We're going to get to a list of those so you can get a feel for what is there. But also on the show, oh, yes, we have green beans with brown butter for you. But also on the show, we're going to talk to Andrew Schloss. Right?
And I can't wait. I have so many questions for him.
Yeah, because,
so many questions.
But let's say why, because he's the guy, right, who has that recipe for this slow roasted turkey at a lower temperature. We talked with him once before, and now we're all scratching our heads again. You put
That's
it before
right.
you go to bed, yeah. and then you get up, and when it's time for the meal, your turkey's just about ready.
Yeah,
really?
No,
is that
no
possible?
Stress.
So
no.
We don't want just about ready. We want it ready. No
Lori's
just about.
Been there with just about ready.
But you can Dinner practice going to
hour.
Your guests and saying it's
just about ready.
I'm intrigued because this I've heard of lots and lots of ways of cooking turkeys. Upside down, in a bag, low temperature,
high temperature, then low.
Yeah, all these things. But I don't think I've ever heard of doing it overnight at a low temperature.
Maybe we need to come up with a list of things to say to our guests if things are delayed. You know, that list from life, your waiting time is 6 minutes. Yeah.
But that's a tricky thing with doing this overnight, you know, because, I mean, at a low temperature, of course, to raise 1 degree takes a lot longer.
Please have another glass of champagne.
That's it. That's exactly it. So you have a backup of wine and champagne, cold, ready to go just
Who
in case.
This? Somebody told me a story of their Thanksgiving where things were delayed and something burned and, you know, it was just something was frozen. And so they really just kept pouring wine for people because they didn't want them to get upset. And then when it was finally, the dinner finally came out, you know, people practically had to go in stretchers to the dining table. So it can happen. Be careful. All right. So we're going to get to Andrew in a little bit. Have we had a ball with this all these weeks, getting this recipe kit together week by week, telling you about things? Chris, you said you had a couple of favorites.
Oh, not just a couple of favorites, but I found things that I've had in the past that I now love again, I guess. Uh-huh. And the green beans are a perfect example of that.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
I had it before, but making it today and tasting it again, I was like, that is an amazing side dish.
Oh, we're talking about green beans with brown butter and pecans. Yeah. We're going to tell you about that in a little bit. So here's what's on our site from weeks of talking and getting you ready. And also because it is just fun for us to have a virtual meal here on the show with you. So we have this imaginary table we sit down at with you as if we've all been having Thanksgiving together for weeks and weeks and weeks. We have up there a savory cornbread stuffing muffins that are baked in your muffin tin.
Doing that one. We're doing that one.
Yeah, that's the one you keep saying I have to try that.
So you can put it in a bread basket. You can put it on the plate next to the turkey. You could have it any time. It goes with chicken. These are savory cornbread stuffing muffins baked in a muffin tin. We have the Brussels sprout recipe from Marion Roy.
Again, another one I've never tried before or even heard of.
I'm going to try that.
I've made it 2-3 times
now. Yeah, you've had it already, right?
So delicious. So chopped up Brussels sprouts, some diced up shallots, pears, a couple pears sliced up. You don't even have to peel them. You just throw some olive oil in the bottom of a roasting pan and dump all that in. Toss it a few times so it gets coated with oil, 400-degree oven. It takes about 30 minutes, and you'll see that the shallots get crispy and the Brussels sprouts start to get kind of brown and crispy. The pears get sort of soft and juicy. And I just put trays of it on the counter now.
And people just walk by and spoon it up.
And even at room temperature,
it's
it
good,
is
huh?
really,
Sounds
really
very
good.
Easy, which is just the thing.
Yeah.
We need recipes like that for Thanksgiving that you can just, boom, in the oven. Don't
without
think about
following a recipe.
Yeah, and the other thing, like Faith just said, is doesn't have to be served hot. So if you're juggling your oven last minute, this one could be a room temperature. That's key to get things to the table.
Yes, true.
Oh, what else is on our list? We give you the recipe for Parmesan crusted creamed corn.
Oh, yeah.
And that was so delicious. Thank you for making that, Chris. Hey, we have things up there for leftovers. So we have Jimmy Villas's turkey hash.
That was good.
For leftovers.
Oh, yeah. Poached egg on top.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And a turkey chili with chocolate, you know, so it has
slow
this
cooker.
A cocoa profile that does so much for it. We made that here on the show, and so we've got that for you. Okay. Should we move into our new one to add that we add as of this show, but it's going to be up there with all the rest at our Thanksgiving recipe kit, and that is at WNPR.org. Search the Faith Middleton Show, and you will get right to the page. So let's go to the videotape. The green beans, the green beans with brown butter and pecans. If I say the words brown butter, don't be scared. I know so many people. Who are afraid to make brown butter.
Because we're afraid we're going to burn the butter is there any such thing? Can you underdo the brown butter?
Yeah, you can underdo it. But you know what? The funny thing about brown butter, though, is you don't have to worry about it because the thing about cooking with butter sometimes is taking it too far and browning it. This is easy because you can take it all the way there and brown
this
it.
This is where a mistake is a really good thing.
That's probably where it came from, right?
Yeah.
But if you underdo the brown butter, is that something that people notice?
Well, it would just taste like regular butter.
And there's nothing wrong
with
that.
But we're going to tell you how utterly simple it is to make brown butter. But if you underdo it, it just tastes like string beans
with
lots of butter and some chopped pecans. If it's brown butter, it has a kind of nutty, toasty quality to it that is one of the most sensual, luxurious things that you could put on food. Okay, should we talk about Chris?
Yeah.
Thank you for making this. This is one of my favorite ways to have green beans. So, a couple pounds of green beans. By the way, originally we found this recipe in How to Cook a Turkey years ago when Fine Cooking the other trimmings, when Fine Cooking put out this cookbook. And they're so good.
And they are.
This is, you know, they have great taste about things. I've been in their testing kitchen. They're so serious about making sure everybody thinks it's delicious. So I respect them so much. So here's green beans with brown butter and pecans. A couple pounds of green beans. You just trim off the ends. You're going to use an entire stick of unsalted butter.
Yay.
And some chopped shallots. You know, you just chop them up fine. Chop up some pecans, and you're going to toast them, maybe in your little toaster oven. Watch them carefully. You're going to have some fresh lemon juice on hand and kosher salt and pepper. So the first thing we do is bring a large pot of salted water to a boil, as if you're going to make spaghetti. And you just dump in the green beans. You cook them until they're tender. It takes about 5 minutes. Quickly drain them in a colander, and then immediately plunge those green beans into a bowl of ice water, because that's going to stop the cooking.
And that can be done a day ahead of time, too.
Oh, good tip.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't have to do that the same day. So you can have
that's
your green
beans
blanched,
actually,
ready to go, and then Thanksgiving Day, you have to do this next part.
So a lot of our recipes have components in them that are like this, where you can do things ahead. So you've plunged them in the water. Now they're cooled off completely. So you drain them again in the colander, and then, you know, just set them in a bowl. Just set the green beans off to the side. Now, here we go. Here comes your skillet on the stovetop. You take out your skillet, and you put it on medium-high heat, and you melt that stick of butter.
And
Chris,
that's the thing.
Let's discuss how to make brown butter.
Yeah. So what I like to do is I'd like to take either a spoon or a whisk to just keep it moving. You can do it if you're good with the pan. You can do it by just moving the pan around. You know what I mean? Just going around in circles to keep the butter moving. That way it browns evenly. And you want to do this carefully because the butter gets hot. But it's very simple. You just keep that going on that heat, and you just keep an eye on it. And what you're looking for is two things. One is that color. color, right? That I think you use the word mahogany. That's a good way to describe that dark brown kind of.
It's as if golden, someone put a drop of brown in it. You know,
yeah,
it's
that's a good
kind
description.
Of brownish golden.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's another clue.
And it's the aroma. And it's that nutty smell. And you won't make – it can't be mistaken. It'll smell almost like the pecans did when they're in the oven.
And there's a little flex in there, right?
Yeah, yeah. And don't be afraid of that because those little flecks –
Is that correct?
Yeah, there's little flex because that is the actual milk solids that are browning. Okay, so you don't want to be afraid of that. That's what you actually want to look for.
And that's what I do get afraid of.
Yeah, you see those little flecks and you're like, oh, something
went wrong.
Yeah, what did I do?
My sauce is breaking.
Right. And those little flecks are what really taste awesome in the butter when they coat the beans and you get those little flecks on the beans.
Yeah.
Absolutely heaven.
So one more time, let's do brown butter. We kind of broke that down as much as possible, just to make you feel comfortable. Really, a stick of butter in a frying pan on medium heat. You either swish the pan around while it's cooking or take a spoon and just stir it around while it's cooking. And we're talking about what? A minute or
a couple? That's a little longer than that. A couple minutes, depending on your heat.
The butter will start to turn a slightly different color, and then all of a sudden it gets to golden brown, and that aroma of nuts comes off the pan.
And you're done.
Remove it from the heat. You are done. You have brown butter. So here we go. In a large skillet over medium-high heat, you melt your stick of butter. As it starts to melt, you just throw in the shallots and the chopped pecans, and you stir with a spoon and keep it all moving. And you will then see the butter turn a light brown, and it'll start to smell nutty.
Yeah.
And those are the two things that need to happen, and you just don't want to burn it. But I promise you, this is so easy. The second it turns brown, you just quickly toss in the green beans, stir them around. They'll get warmed through in about 3 minutes.
Heaven.
And then you just squeeze it with a little lemon juice and toss in a little salt and pepper and put it in a dish and serve it.
Ooh.
And it had a suggestion about a little extra lemon juice if you think it needs a little extra. I used it because I that brown butter and that lemon combination is heaven. So it says two tablespoons or a little bit more.
Honestly,
that little bit more is definitely
the best green beans on the planet.
What about a little lemon zest in there?
Ooh, yeah, the zest.
Would it be good or
oh, heaven.
Would it knock
not be,
off the
no.
be too bitter
too
against
much?
The I don't know.
No,
I'm
no,
just
it'd
asking.
Be perfect.
Whoa.
And then you'd have those little flecks. It would be a good show, too.
Oh.
Those little flecks of orange with those little flecks of brown.
Maybe I'll try this. I'm going to try that, Lori. Okay, so again, at our website with all of our recipes, part of our Thanksgiving recipe kit, look for green beans with brown butter and pecans. Okay, butternut squash lovers, or if you're just looking for something to do with butternut squash, we're going to do butternut squash agrodolce. We're talking about Italian country-style butternut squash. How about that for Thanksgiving? More of the Food Schmooze coming your way. Stay with us.
And I said, what about breakfast to Tiffany? She said, I think I remember the film. And as I recall,
cornbread had a fight. Beans, not cornbread, out of sight. Cornbread said, "Now that's all right. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night, and I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night. Now that's what Beans said to cornbread." Be ready tomorrow night.
Beans told cornbread, you ain't straight. You better wake up or I'll gas your gate. Been in this pot since 2:30. Swelling and a puffing and I almost do. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to cornbread. Always get mad at me, but I ain't mad at you.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at noon. You can join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugene Almatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. And we thank you first and foremost for listening to the show. As promised, we have coming up in a little bit Andrew Schloss, who says that he's going to tell us how to do slow roasted turkey, the kind you can put in the oven before you go to bed, and it's done when you're ready for the meal. We're trying to figure out how this works timing-wise.
Yeah,
do you have to go to bed at 3? Do you eat at 8 at night? How does it work?
The next day.
24-hour turkey.
So let's go to our something for butternut squash. Searching, and then we said, oh, this is it. Butternut squash agrodolce. Jonathan, this is an Italian word meaning?
So agro means sour. And dolce means sweet.
You so Italian, you?
Agro dolce.
I'm like 1/8.
I didn't know that.
That's enough. I say
it's not enough when I lived in East Haven. But
yeah, that's right. Well,
I say having one sour, you know, one drop of Italian blood is good. I'd be claiming that I'm Italian. What a beautiful culture. Okay, so.
Really, I just have the internet, but that's all right.
So sweet and sour butternut.
Yeah, sweet and sour butternut squash. Yeah, I think this is unusual. And the wonderful thing is, this is from quite some time ago, a recipe from Cooking Light. And their job is to, you know, their goal is to preserve deliciousness, but to lighten things up so it has that added benefit. It's not that we're not splurging on Thanksgiving, but some things, you know.
Balance.
Poaching all of our vegetables in nothing but butter. Not a great idea. We gave you green beans with brown butter because you get to do that one time. So now we're going to make up for it on the butternut squash.
So you've got to have these side by side. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe this means you can have some pie. Yeah. So a butternut squash, you peel it and cut it into half-inch wedges. A couple tablespoons of olive oil, some kosher salt. You don't have to remember this. It's up on the website. Fresh ground black pepper. Here's the agro part, red wine vinegar, a few tablespoons of red wine vinegar. And the dolce part, the sweet part, is 3 tablespoons of honey. You get fresh basil, chop it up, just 1/4 cup, and a few tablespoons of chopped fresh mint.
Oh, wow. This sounds interesting.
This is the Italian countryside kind of way of treating this. How easy is this? You could peel the butternut squash and chop it the day before if you want. So the oven gets preheated. I think it's 400 degrees. You just throw the wedges of butternut squash on a baking sheet, drizzle that squash with oil, sprinkle on top the salt and pepper, and toss it all to coat together. And you bake the squash for about 35 minutes. It'll be tender and golden. And then you take a little bowl and you combine the little bit of vinegar with the honey, a little bit more salt. Put that squash from the oven on a platter and then drizzle the top with mixture. Toss it with some spoons to coat and then sprinkling of the fresh basil and mint on the top. How about that?
All right, that's interesting.
I want that one too.
You know, the butternut squash gets, because you've roasted it until it's tender, it gets that caramelized thing on on both sides, and it's really
and that sweet and sour wonderful. Sauce drizzled on top,
different
mint and basil, a great
and
idea.
so good. Okay, so it's a sweet and sour butternut squash. We call it butternut squash agrodolce, and it's right up on our website, WNPR.org, our entire recipe kit. Just click on programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. And thanks to the folks at Cooking Light.
And don't forget the wines that are on the site.
That's right. We have a list of wines that we adore that think will be terrific with the Thanksgiving meal. Oh, yeah. And they are a tremendous value for the quality of the wine. We have tasted all of these. So fantastic. They're all up there. I have a Thanksgiving Cosmo sparkler up there. All right, here we go to Andrew Schloss, who is author of the book Cooking Slow. He's been on the show before, and we wanted to talk with Andrew, to have him back, to go over this again with us. Andrew, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Hi, Faith. How are you?
We're great. Thanks. Thanks for being with us. As you know, you're with Chris and Lori and Jonathan. Here's our question. This idea of slow cooking the turkey, we thought we had it down. But then after you left us, we kept saying, really? Well, wait a minute. What about this? What about that? So I think there are a lot of people who might be interested in this. How does this work? Can you somehow put the turkey in the oven at a low temperature at bedtime and have it be ready for the meal?
Absolutely.
Okay, start us at the beginning.
I'm going to count the hours.
Here's how it works. It works because temperature and time are in balance with one another whenever you roast anything. Whenever you cook anything, it is a balance between temperature and time. So if you lower the temperature, you simply are extending the time. In slow roasting a turkey, you're setting your oven at the temperature you want the turkey to be when it is done, which is about 170 degrees. And that's as low as your oven's going to go. So at that temperature, the amount of time it takes for minimally to cook is about an hour a pound. If you go longer than that, there is not a problem because the oven temperature is the temperature the turkey has to be when it's done, so it can't overcook.
So about an hour a pound.
Right.
Let's do the timing. Yeah, so let's do the timing on this. Let's say, what do most people have, a 15-pound turkey?
Yeah, 12 to 15.
Some people have a 20-something pound turkey.
A 20-pound turkey would take about a day.
But you could even leave it in longer is what you're saying.
You could go in longer. So that's the thing. You need to get that hour pound minimally, but if it goes longer, it's not going to hurt it because your oven temperature is so low.
And you're just keeping it at the temperature that you're going to eat it at.
And the one thing you have to do is, because there is bacteria on the outside of the turkey that could grow at that 170 degrees, you want to put it in for about 30 minutes to 45 minutes at a high temperature. I usually do about 400 degrees.
That was my question.
To get the surface to be hotter, way hotter than 175, and then you turn it down.
That's
to start with. So let's do the numbers. And again, we're going to have this at our website. But the numbers on this slow-cooked turkey, slow roast in the oven, if it's a 15 pounds, let's say, and you're going to bed at 11 at night, and it needs a minimum of an hour a pound, that's 15 hours at least. So the turkey would be ready at 2 p.m.
The thing is, you could put it in at 9 o'clock.
And you would still be okay.
And just leave it for those last 2 hours, and it'd still be...
Andrew, what happens if you have one of those digital readout ovens, or the regular dial oven, as I do, and there's no 170? How do you know when you're at 170?
The digital readout ovens, all the ones I've seen, go down to 170 and won't go below that. The ones that have like a radial dial, generally the bottom temperature on those is 200. So just go below that. Just go another notch below that.
Just one notch. And I guess you could just throw a thermometer in there and see that it gets to 170, right?
Yes, and it's actually something you would want to do anyway. You want to make sure that your oven is calibrated right, because if your oven is 25 degrees off and it's in there for 20 hours, that could be enough to really overcook it. So your oven does have to be calibrated right for this.
Okay, so oven thermometer, good thing to test. Then you know where to mark your setting on the big day. And if you're just doing, some people just do turkey breasts, does it all work the same?
It would be the same thing. At 170 for a really long time, the turkey breast could overcook, because turkey breast is actually done at around 165. You will still get softer results by roasting at a lower temperature. I just wouldn't go that full hour a pound for that. Turkey breast tends to weigh at the most 8 pounds. So I would check it at 4 hours or 5 hours.
Here's the key question, though. What advantage, besides convenience, does this give you? What does this do to flavor, to crispness? If it stays in extra hours because you want to delay the meal for any reason, is there any danger of drying out? What happens to the meat?
It's about texture. It will give you the softest, moistest texture you can possibly get. Because when you're roasting, if I roast a turkey at 350 and the doneness is 175 or 170, the surface of the turkey is getting up to 350 for the very interior to get to 170. That means the surface is overcooking in order to get the center to be 170.
So true.
If I set my oven at 170, then the entire turkey is not getting any hotter than that.
I get the science. They come back to the flavor. You've done texture. What does that soft thing do? I mean, is the meat shreddy or stewy? Or is just
no. What shreddy is in poultry is dried out. Shreddy happens when the protein constricts and the moisture comes out, and you're left with these shreds of dried protein that aren't moist anymore. If your oven is set at 170, the protein never gets hotter than that, so it doesn't shrink more, and the juices don't come out.
And it's not hot enough to ever boil the liquid away.
Exactly. So that the moisture, typically in roasting, you get a lot of juices in the bottom of the pan because the protein on the outside has shrunk so much that it's squeezed the liquid in that protein out into the bottom of the pan, where in this method of roasting, that doesn't happen.
What about gravy, people who use the pan drippings?
You tend to not get as much liquid. You still get pan drippings because there's going to be some liquid coming out. Mm-hmm. And so the liquid is actually a little bit more concentrated, and you would just have to use a broth to get the volume of liquid. But all that liquid's still in your turkey, which is the main thing you want.
So if you're cooking at the low temperature, what happens to people who like to stuff the bird? In this case, you would not do that.
You can't do it. If you want to serve with stuffing, I actually recommend, regardless of how you're roasting a turkey, not to put the stuffing in the bird, not to put the dressing in the bird.
Can you slow roast the stuffing in with the turkey?
You could. It's not going to get quite hot enough. What you could do is cook it in a pan and get it really hot and then stick it in the oven to stay warm, which it would do at that 170 degrees. And then if you want to present it with this dressing inside the bird, you just stuff it before you take it out to carve it. And I would recommend that regardless of how you're roasting your turkey, because what happens is in that scenario I talked about where the oven's at 350 and the outside is getting way overdone for the interior to get done, if I stuff that turkey with the bread stuffing, I'm making this giant crater of mess that heat has to go through, where if I have the cavity open, I'm getting heat all around the meat, and it's going to cook much more evenly and much more quickly, where if I stuff it, I have to cook it way longer, which makes the outside overcook more than it would normally.
This is Andrew Schloss, who's done a terrific book called Cooking Slow, and in that book, the recipe that, you know, there are many that got to us, but this one in particular, I'm going to do a turkey at home, though I spend it on the Cape with my family. And I am going to do this, Andrew, and Lori, I think you are too. And so to come back to the skin, do we get that sort of caramelized mahogany crispy skin?
You'll get a browning with that initial 45 minutes at 400 degrees. You get some browning. And then it really depends. What I often will do in slow roasting is at the very end, if the skin isn't quite as brown as I want it to be, I'll just crank the oven up to 500 for about 10 minutes. And because the skin will have dehydrated some, it will brown very quickly at that temperature, and it won't go deeper because you're only going for 10 minutes.
And is there anything that anyone would put on the turkey that would alter any of this? You know, some people put butter under the skin or truffles or whatever.
You can do that. I think in the recipe in the book, we do it with apple cider. So that apple cider is also going to
caramelize,
put sugar on the skin that will help it brown.
Wow. Oh, boy. This is so fantastic.
So you can treat this turkey like any other turkey. You can do whatever rubs you want. If you're used to putting butter under the skin, you don't have to be afraid to do that. Okay.
Right.
I feel like one of those children who just aren't getting the math, you know?
The only thing that will screw it up is stuffing it. As far as flavor goes, flavor hardly ever is structural. Flavor is always just what it tastes like, and that is completely flexible.
And no need for basting.
Basting happens because juices are coming out and you're trying to integrate them back in. But in this method, the juices aren't coming out, so there's no need to baste.
Very cool.
So we're going to have this at our website. We've had Andrew's book at the website before, but we're going to bring this back again so that you can find this slow roast method and do it if you'd like to. And again, this is with a defrosted turkey, not with a frozen turkey. Sometimes you just have to be absolutely clear about every single thing.
If it's frozen, you have to start a day a pound.
Wow, we could start.
It is like that.
Oh, we missed our window.
Yeah, we should have started our window.
It's too late to start roasting now.
Andrew, what are you making for Thanksgiving?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me this. I have no idea at this point. I'm definitely slow roasting the turkey. We're Jewish, so we're going to do latkes because you know, this is that Hanukkah Thanksgiving thing. Yeah. So we'll do that. And I was thinking actually of making stuffing latkes.
Oh, wow. What an idea. Stuffing.
That could be as good as our muffin ones.
Meaning crisp it up ahead of time and then...
Sour cream and applesauce on top.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, Andrew, let me get to something about latkes with you, because we're going to do some more on the show coming up. But Chris and I both agreed that our favorite way to have latkes is with a little roe and sour cream. So American sturgeon caviar, which is farm-raised in a good way. And, you know, no, it's not like the finest caviars, but it's quite good.
It's made in California.
And then, you know, a little sour cream. I'm glad you mentioned latkes is what I'm trying to say. And what a brilliant idea you have about
stuffing latkes.
What would you put all the stuffing seasonings into the latkes?
They're not going to be potato. I think I'm going to take the stuffing and make latkes out of it. Or you could do stuffing flavored latkes. You could put a little reduced chicken broth into it and some poultry seasoning. The onions are already there.
So this is like doing fried stuffing. Well, it's like fried stuffing.
Yeah, fried stuffing.
It's genius. I love this. Put that in one of your cookbooks. I'm telling you, it's just fabulous as an idea. So do you do the usual, the green beans, the mashed potatoes, all that business?
We usually do, let's see, we do sweet potatoes and apples. We have about 20 people, and we have maybe six vegetarians. I will do a stuffed pumpkin that's stuffed with risotto. So I bake a pumpkin, and I usually do that out on the grill because the turkey's in the oven. So I'll do an indirect grilling with this pumpkin.
We're all thinking, what's the address?
Can we add a few to that?
That recipe's in the slow cooking book.
The pumpkin one.
There's a pumpkin.
It's a slow-baked pumpkin stuffed with pumpkin seed risotto.
What a dinner invitation your friends have. Andrew, please stay with us. We are going to ask you a whole bunch of Thanksgiving questions and talk food some more. Maybe some latkes some more. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Find the food, wine, recipes, and cocktails online anytime at WNPR.org. Just click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
I keep drinking malted milk, trying to drive my blues away. I keep drinking malted milk, trying to drive my blues away. Baby, you're just as welcome to my loving. Flowers in me. Malted milk, malted milk.
I'm Faith Middleton with the gang, and this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, F-A-I-T-H-W-N-P-R, or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search the Faith Middleton Show. You know, isn't this a funny life we're in? I mean, it used to be you had a phone number, you know, and now we all have about 47 addresses. You know, it's just hysterical.
And nobody knows anybody's phone number.
Right. You want to tweet us, you want to this, you want to that.
So many different ways to get in touch with you.
Okay, we're lucky. We have Andrew Schloss with us on the show, and he is just great to talk with about Thanksgiving. So, Andrew, we had, believe it or not, one more question about the turkey that you slow roast. At the end, when you take it out, you know how they typically, Lori was saying this, they typically rest a turkey? Do you have to do that? Do you let it rest, or is it just good to go?
One of the cool things about slow roasting is that the need for resting is pretty much eliminated. There's no harm in resting, but you don't have to do it. The reason you rest a roast after it is done cooking is that when a roast cooks at a high temperature, the outside dehydrates and the juices congregate near the center. So if you were to slice it as soon as it came out of the oven, any juices that are in the center, it's like a saturated sponge, and they're going to spill out onto the carving board. But in slow cooking, because those juices actually never migrate out of the tissue, out of the meat. They stay where they're supposed to be. There's no benefit, really, in letting it rest. You don't need to do it at all.
Andrew, were you trained in science when you were in school?
I actually learned science through cooking.
Very
and
nice.
I do a food science column for Fine Cooking magazine. And written with my writing partner, Dave Joachim, we wrote a food science encyclopedia several years ago called Science of Good Food.
That's the reverse of how it mostly works. Often we have scientists who are interested in, you know, the micro side of cooking and like food, and they end up in this world. And I see that it's been the reverse for you. That is very, very interesting. So let's come back to latkes, because right. Here's the wonderful overlap. And the foods that we adore, it is Hanukkah at the same time that it's Thanksgiving. And this is an unusual thing to have happen, but it means we get to talk about all the good stuff. We're going to talk more about latkes next week. But, Andrew, the secret when you're making latkes, and you can flavor them any way you want, it turns out, though many people are traditionalists, what do you think is the most important thing about making a latke? You know, the thing that would kind of ruin it and not make it special.
And we're talking about potato latkes?
Potato latkes.
I think that, well, I am a shredded potato latke guy. I'm not a mashed potato latke guy. And for the shredded potatoes, I think the most important thing is when you shred them into a bowl of cold water, which leaches out much of the starch. And by getting much of the starch out and much of the water that's in the potato, your latke is going to crisp up much better. So you shred them right into the water. Just let them sit there for a second, take them out, and wring it dry in a cloth towel, like a flat weave kitchen towel.
Wring the shredded potatoes dry.
Yeah, wring the shredded potatoes out. And what that will do is really dry the potato out so that it stays crisp, and it also makes it so that the potato doesn't oxidize, so they don't turn that, like, pinky purple-gray color.
Uh-huh.
That can happen.
Yeah.
And that's mostly from the starch in the potato that's going to do that. But so getting that starch out, I think, is the most important thing.
What do you do to bind them together? What do you add?
Egg and some sort of flour or matzo meal. It doesn't really matter. And if you do that technique of getting the starch out, you need very little dry ingredient. So maybe a tablespoon or two of flour or matzo meal.
And if you were trying to make the latke gluten-free, how would you do it?
You could use anything. You could do rice
almond flour.
It just has to be dry. So there's no magic in wheat flour for this. It could be any flour.
Okay. And then when you said an egg, do you do a whole egg?
Yes.
Is there anyone who just does egg whites?
You could. The egg in this is the glue. So it's the protein in the egg that you want to get. And there's protein in the white and there's protein in the yolk. So it doesn't really matter. It's just whatever you want.
What size latkes do you do? How big do you make them?
Oh, my goodness. I guess I make them maybe 3 or 4 inches across. I think I'm pretty shoddy in my measurement.
I like the uneven
and do
ones.
You, yeah, me too. And do you have them with applesauce or sour cream?
Both.
Wow. On the same one?
Well, I don't eat sour cream because I'm intolerant of many things, including dairy. But no, people do both.
Are you traditionalist, or do you put all kinds of flavors in your latkes?
I'm pretty traditional in that. I do. I mean, because I write recipes, I've done all sorts of latkes. And so we've had different kinds of latkes. But I like the regular old potato ones. But we do beet latkes, carrot latkes, there's zucchini, all different
zucchini
vegetables.
Ones sound good.
So is it possible to put the applesauce in the latke before you make it?
And this is because you're camping?
Nice.
I think I would put maybe shredded apple in the latke.
Ooh,
yeah, see, I'm trying to get the flavor inside the latke itself,
so
instead of
to
just... instead of just sitting it on top, I wonder if it wouldn't meld those flavors of the apple even more.
It would, although, I mean, to my palate, part of the sensuality of this is this crisp latke with the cold or even warm applesauce, but the sort of wet applesauce with this dry, crispy latke, I think that juxtaposition is part of the cool thing to me.
Yeah, that's
so
what makes it awesome.
I mean, I could see getting some apple flavor in, and it's also, I think, the difference between the flavors of the latke and the applesauce, keeping them separate, to me, is a good thing.
I wonder how many people, everybody who's Jewish, are going to do this. And now, you know, I'm not Jewish, but I really want to do this. Now I want to have latkes instead of regular
potatoes. I'm going to go with his stuffing latkes, because that just makes perfect sense.
I mean, how many Hanukkah-celebrating people are going to now combine the two, put
together
the turkey and the latke thing all on the same table?
Very good.
A lot. It's going to be the thing this year.
Yeah. I eat it.
Does it happen often?
And my favorite thing that I saw was a turkey menorah.
Oh, no.
What?
Which was the best thing ever.
How in the world? How did they do that?
Well, the feathers on the tail feathers are spanned out and the candles come out of the tail.
Nice. I want a picture of that.
That's creative.
Oh, we have to find this online. We have to. A turkey
menorah.
Put that
on the website.
And right up on the table. How fantastic would this be? You're going to do latkes and turkey all together because you're thinking of making stuffing latkes. Normally, if you were having latkes and these holidays did not overlap quite this way, what would you serve with your latkes?
If it was just Hanukkah and not Thanksgiving, what we normally do is a lot of latkes, so that's your main course, and then we'll have a salad or something like that with it. So we don't do a meat when we're doing the latke meal for Hanukkah.
This is the second time this has ever happened, that Hanukkah and Thanksgiving were on the same day. No, second.
First time. When was it?
1888.
Wow.
Since Thanksgiving's been a holiday.
Oh, gotcha.
And the next time it's going to happen is...
It's like 17,000.
It's 77,000 years from now.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is too funny.
That's worth celebrating.
77,000
really,
years from
that's
now.
It's the year 79,811.
Wow.
Put that on your calendar.
I think that's the Gregorian year, not the Hebrew.
I think we should buy lottery tickets.
Probably this is our last chance.
Probably.
I'm thinking so.
You never know about science, but yeah.
Wow. Now, well, that if that doesn't convince...
That's the word. That's the portmanteau.
Thanksgivica,
yeah.
So I think if this has not convinced you, you're not going to have this chance again for another 77,000 years. And I mean that. So I don't think, is that the first time we've ever said anything like that on the food?
I would think.
In the year 77, what is it, 7711?
79,811.
Okay. You have to. You just have to combine these two things, latkes and these themes, no matter how you want to do it. If you want to do it the way Andrew's going to do it, which is to use the stuffing mixture to make the latkes, which is so genius, or... to serve latkes in place of the normal potatoes. How can we not do this?
I want to know what Andrew has for his leftovers, because he's like the go-to guy for Thanksgiving. What do you do with all the leftovers? Or are there any leftovers?
We of course, do Thanksgiving sandwiches. I like leftover side dishes more than I like leftover turkey.
Me too.
And
really?
So we'll do all kinds of stuff with the leftover sides, like make pancakes out of leftover mashed sweet potatoes, that kind of stuff. One thing I'll do is like make a soup or stew, because we do this greens casserole. You cut that up and that can, it sort of becomes like an escarole soup. So it's a broth and you can put the turkey meat in that, and you get this, because everything's pre-cooked, you get this really rich stewy soup within a couple of minutes. It's really, as soon as it's hot, it's done. So we'll do stuff like that, but turkey tends to dry out so much. Reheating it is, I think, problematic. So mostly sandwiches, I guess, with the turkey.
Andrew, you've all been talking about sandwiches as leftovers. I wanted to let you know that one year I said to my family, I need your indulgence, because I just once want to have my turkey sandwich that I wait for the next day. Mm-hmm. I want to have it at the meal, at my plate. I will plate it beautifully. And so I did, because the turkey was warm and moist, and then I added the stuffing to the sandwich and salt and pepper.
Open face, or no? No, closed.
Yeah. And I had it all set up. And people were so, my family is, they're just terrific. They were so indulgent.
Did anyone join in with you?
No,
I would have been right there with
me too.
Pass
me
the
too.
Bread.
Totally. It was really fun. It was so fun.
I would definitely do that.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, I like that.
We could have a Thanksgiving, we should all get together one year for a Thanksgiving sandwich dinner.
Yeah. backwards Thanksgiving.
Turkey sandwich canapés.
Ooh.
Yeah, with the stuffing, yeah. You know how they say dessert first. Well, I say leftovers first. Here we go. All right. Let me see. Is there anything else? We just did a butternut squash aguadulce. So it is a sweet and sour sauce on that recipe. We've done Brussels sprouts with shallots and pears roasted in the oven. I added some chopped cooked Spanish chorizo to that, and so that orange paprika oil sort of melted into the Brussels sprouts, and that was really fun. These are things that are up on our website, and you can see, along with Andrew's incredible idea of slow roasting the turkey at 170 degrees for an hour a pound, meaning you can put it in before you go to bed and keep it in the oven as long as you need to until it's dinner time.
At least an hour a pound.
An hour a pound, but you can do more. Amazing, amazing. Very. There's no resting time needed at the end. The outside gets crispy if you give it a quick blast of heat. And the meat is incredibly moist, says Andrew. So we're all trying it.
Do you still take its temperature when it's finished, just to be sure?
I probably would make you feel better. You can do it. If it's been in the oven for 20 hours at 170 degrees, it's 170 degrees.
So there's
if
not
it's not, then the problem's your oven.
Right.
I have a question about frying a turkey. Have you ever tried one, and do you like it better than this slow roasting?
My past macho life, I did do that. And I thought it was silly.
You thought it was silly? Okay, go ahead.
I don't think it did anything more different than roasting it.
There's a neighbor not too far from me that does this every year, because when I'm doing my walk at the end of the meal, I smell the most incredible aroma coming from their yard.
What does your dog Jack do?
Well, he wasn't with me this particular year, but I mean, you couldn't help but notice that this incredible aroma was coming from this one yard. And
aren't the autumn leaves amazing?
What are you guys doing over there? They've had quite a crowd, and they were on their second turkey that they were deep frying.
Whoa.
So I guess if you need it in a pinch, quickly.
Yeah, well, I think that it's exciting to do. It's a cool thing to do. What I think actually does make a difference is roasting a turkey over wood, like on a grill or over charcoal. I think there is a difference in flavor and a really great difference in color. It gets a beautiful, really deep brown, Auburn kind of color.
Andrew Schloss, have you ever been a fan of cutting up the turkey into pieces when you roast it so that all the pieces seem to roast evenly, easy to deal with? Did you ever do that?
If I was going to cook at a higher temperature, that is what I would do. Because the problem with the high temperature cooking is the breast is going to overcook before the legs are done. So it makes sense to do it in pieces. The other thing that helps is spatchcocking, which is to take the backbone out and lay the turkey out flat, like butterflying it.
Like butterfly, yeah.
Will even out the cooking time. And the other thing you can do, although works better with chicken than turkey because turkeys are so big, is start it roasting upside down. Have you ever done that?
Yeah,
I'm not so great at flipping it over.
Yeah, turkeys are hard to flip. That's the thing.
Chicken's much easier.
Hey, how about if you are someone who has a turkey with one of those yellow buttons that says, I'm done, can that person do the slow roast method? And, you know, what's the anxiety
I would take the button out. Because
just get rid of it.
The button doesn't pop until it's completely desiccated. it actually won't pop at 100.
So there is no anxiety.
Yeah.
Just
take the button out. Out of all the methods we just talked about, I think I'm attracted to the slow roasting one because it takes all those questions about doneness and, is it going to be done in time?
I'm thinking, put the turkey in, then drive to the Cape and have my meal with my family.
Yeah, when you come back, it's ready. Totally.
The slow roasting, the slow cooking is an amazing thing to do for any kind of entertaining because things can't overcook. So whenever you're doing a party, which is what Thanksgiving basically is, there's always this question of will it be done in time? Will I have to be in the kitchen when my guests are here? Slow cooking really eliminates much of that anxiety because it's very difficult to overcook things.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Andrew. Happy Thanksgiving. Love what you do.
Same here. Bye-bye.
Andrew Schloss, who is author of Cooking Slow, and that slow cooking recipe is His book is on our website. Its slow cooking recipe is up there on our website, along with all the recipes and drinks, wine, cocktails, everything we've been talking and feeding to you for weeks and weeks and weeks. Our whole Thanksgiving kit is up there. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Here's to pleasure, my friends. And remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.